Hey, it's Jeff and Jeremy from the Ultra Running Guys. And if you're here, you probably already know that we started this podcast to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey.
And we just wanted to take a moment to say thank you and let you know how much we appreciate you being part of the Ultra Running Guys community, because we know there are a million other ways you could choose to spend this time.
We love hearing from you. We're always trying to improve. So if you have guest suggestions or feedback, hit us up through social media or reach out to us at theultrarunningguys@gmail.com.
And again, thanks for plugging in. And with that, enjoy the episode. And remember, when in doubt, just show up. And welcome back to the Ultra Running Guys. You got Jeremy Reynolds and Jeff Winchester of the Ultra Running Guys. And the reason that we're here is to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey. And part of understanding that next step is figuring out what it should be. And so we have started this race spotlight series. And tonight is a big one. We're bringing in the big guns. I'm sure you've heard of the world famous Badwater 135. So we're bringing in a favorite guest of ours from our main show, and we're just super excited about it. And so, Jeff, why don't you tell us about the race we're going to be talking about tonight?
You don't want to say who it is.
Well, I was going to let you do the big reveal.
So today we are going to be talking about the Salton Sea, which is one of the Badwater family of races and stuff. It's a little bit lesser known than Badwater 135, but it is no less challenging from what we understand. So for the race, there are teams in this race that are different than an individual runner. And so you will have teams that will consist of 2 to 3 runners. It's not a relay, though. They have to stay together the entire time. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that in the episode.
It's a big twist.
It's a twist. It's a challenging twist from what we understand. The course covers 81 miles over deserts and mountains in Southern California from Salton City to Palomar Mountain. The route is a mix of road and trail with a total elevation gain of over 9,000 feet for the entire course. And the next race is going to take place on April 27th. They do have a cap of 100 runners, and we're going to get into some of the details. And before we do, let's introduce our guest, who is coming back to the show because he's been on it before.
The man, the myth, the legend,
Mr. Chris Kosman. Chris, thank you so much for joining us again.
Great to be back with you guys. Thanks for having me on your show.
Well, so look, we're super excited about this. Obviously, Badwater has the name. When we had you on, we did touch kind of on all the races. But it was interesting. We talked just before this. We had Emily Lyons on recently on the main show, and she really jumped into the Salton Sea, nicknamed it the Baby Badwater. So we're interested in hearing kind of how that plays with you and why that is. But we're going to go through the details in case somebody is interested in running this race. But we're interested. We always like the insights of, you know, the RDs. And so when it comes to, out of everything you do, when it comes to Badwater Salton Sea, what is your personal favorite thing about this race?
It's definitely the team aspect of the event. You know, I started it in 2013, Badwater Salton Sea, as the first sister race to the Badwater 135. And it's 81 miles from below sea level to the top of a mountain. So, you know, and from the deserts to the, you know, tree covered mountains. So it's very reminiscent of the Badwater 135 route, but more compact and in some ways more extreme, because you go between those extreme environments pretty quickly. And then the reason I started the team, you know, concept of having ultra running teams, I call it team ultra racing dynamics, or TURD for short, just as a joke.
Perfect.
I actually came up with the team concept because the roads are narrow. It's very difficult to get all the permits in place for the race. And I was just thinking, like, how can I have a larger event but a smaller footprint? And so the idea of having the runners share a crew, you know, came to mind. Less vehicles, because that's the main thing that, you know, the governing agencies see, is all these vehicles. You know, the runners are on the side of the road or the shoulder, and it's more about how many vehicles you've got and parking issues and traffic and pulling on and off the shoulder and all of that kind of stuff. And so that's how I came up with the team concept. But because the environment is so extreme, you can't just sort of loosely share a crew. You know, people would die out there. And so that's why I came up with the team concept, where you have to stay together. You know, basically you can only separate because one of you has to go, you know, relieve themselves in the, you know, desert or bushes or the occasional restroom. Otherwise they have to stay together. And I was just really intrigued with what that would bring to the race, because ultra running is really such a solitary sport. You don't have to run with anyone. Often you spend a lot of your race time in the longer, tougher races by yourself. It's very introspective. You're just like monitoring, how do I feel? How are my feet, my toes, my muscles, my back, my neck, my stomach? What am I eating? What's my pace? Like everything is just like totally just going in, and just, you just are literally self-absorbed for the duration. And sure, you enjoy the setting and all of that, but what you need to think about is self-monitoring yourself the whole time. And so I thought, you know, we could just flip that on its head where, yes, you're going to be doing that, but you also need to be paying attention to the one or two people that you're running with, and how are they doing and how are they feeling? And, you know, how can you complement and support one another? And so that was kind of how it all got started. And I wanted a load, a high route, and I wanted that team concept. And this is just a fabulous route. And so I launched it in 2013, which amazingly, you know, a decade ago, time flies.
It's incredible though. It's a little bit different than when you think about running an ultra and you have a pacer with you, because like you said, you're both individual in this, to some degree, your own individual person, and you're not there. If I'm pacing you, for example, I'm more inclined to be dedicating my time to how do I help you succeed here. But I've also got to make sure that I am engaged the entire time, because I can't drop out at some point. So sticking with your team concept, we're going to dig a little bit more specifically. According to the rules, the two runners have to stay
two or three.
Sorry about that correction. Yeah. Two or three runners have to stay within 10 meters of one another. And after mile 6.9, I think it's 6.9. Yeah. They have to be single file.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically. Yeah. Because so the first 6.9 miles, they're running along the edge of the Salton Sea, which is actually the largest lake in California. It's very little known. It's way down in southeastern California, or it's practically Mexico. It's way down there. It's below sea level, and it's sort of post-apocalyptic. It was supposed to be this big boom, you know, town resort region back in the 50s and 60s, and all of these parcels of land were developed and roads were put in, and then just a few homes here and there, and it never took off for various reasons. Basically because there are no rivers feeding the lake. And so it, you know, it basically just keeps receding. And so it looks like something from some post-apocalyptic movie, to be honest. You know, there's burned out houses and, you know, roads with no houses on them, and, you know, the remnants of yacht clubs and stuff like that. And so it's 6.9 miles where I just want the runners to really embrace running together and really see the Salton Sea, because then they're going to veer and literally run away from it due west. And so I have the support teams go to mile 6.9, which is when they leave Salton City and kind of get on the main route, just go over there and wait. And then we have race officials and arrows to mark the turn so they don't get lost, and they get over there. And then they're getting on, you know, a route that goes over to San Diego County, and it's not super busy, but it's a little busy. And so the people need to run single file. And honestly, they should anyway, even though this is running and not bike racing, drafting does exist in running, and it does help. And especially when you're out in the desert and you might have a 20, 30, 40 mile an hour wind blasting you, it's in the best interest of the runners to get single file. They don't, you know, if they're on the shoulder, they can be side by side, but if they're on the pavement, they need to be single file. And honestly, the faster teams do really, you know, It's not like the Tour de France, but they're definitely working together and taking turns leading and stuff like that. And at that point, you know, it's in their own best interest, and it's also just safer.
I think it's so interesting for anybody listening. If you're like, okay, you've piqued my interest, now I kind of want to know, for clarity, we mentioned it can be two person or three person teams. And I was reading on the website that originally it started with three person teams, and that was kind of the spirit of it. And then the two person teams got introduced. So at home, just know that there is definitely a financial benefit to doing three person teams. It sounds like that's incentivized. But it also means, right, that having to stay that 10 meters close, I would think that choosing your teammates becomes a critical piece. And we had kind of had it down in the notes, but we joked about it beforehand. So what do you think, from your experience, what advice would you give if somebody's listening and is like, okay, I want to do this? what do you think makes a successful team where, you know, you won't kill each other like we may if we run it together?
You know, it's funny, you know, now that we've had the race for 10 years and we've had, 600 people compete in it. And let me just get my numbers. We have 690 people entrants over the years, 495 unique people. And I've just seen so many things happen in those team ultra racing dynamics. You know, I've had people who were great friends coming in, leave, not speaking to one another. We've had teams that just met through the Facebook page for the event and teamed up, didn't even look at one another's ultra sign up or anything to see if they were comparable. And then they just came and had a blast together and they're friends for life. You know, we've had all kinds of things happen. We had one year, there was a three-man team and there was an Italian guy who wanted to run and he was coming from Italy, didn't know anybody here. And he just went on the Facebook page and said, you know, can I join a team? And these two guys took him on. Very little language, you know, ability between them all and different pace. And at the bottom of the final ascent to the finish at the top of Palomar Mountain, one of the Americans literally called me and he's like, we can't stand this guy anymore. And, you know, he can't keep up with us. And, you know, we want to, you know, what should we do? And I'm like, this is what you signed up for, guys. This is like, you might as well just call me and ask if you can have a ride up here to the finish line. And is that okay? Because the race intrinsic to the event is the team ultra experience.
Right.
And so he's like, okay, I looked at my watch and I'm like, look, you've got, you know, 12 teams behind you. You've got plenty of time. If you need to slow down for him a little bit, fine, just slow down. You know, who cares? Slow down. You're still going to make it. And then you will all finish together as a team. And meanwhile, your foreign runner, he probably doesn't even realize that you guys are so exasperated. And you're going to make his, you know, trip so meaningful by all finishing together and all getting your buckles together. And also, if the teams don't finish intact, they're unranked.
Right.
So, you know, if they're still an official finisher and get a time and get a buckle, but they don't get a placement if they don't finish as the team that they started as. And so he's like, okay, yeah, you're right. And then, you know, several hours later, they finished and they were all happy and, you know, everybody was excited and, you know, hugging and everything. And, you know, so, but we've had the opposite happen. I mean, on the trail section, especially in the middle of the race, you know, a couple times we've had runners just, you know, give it the finger basically to their teammate and run on ahead of them. And then, you know, if we find out during the race, we'll disqualify somebody for that. Because first of all, the spirit of the race is that you stay together. It's a team ultra. That's what you sign up for. And secondly, it's not safe, especially in the trail section. And you've got 9 miles where you're out there in the Anza Borrego Desert State Park. It's extremely hot. It's rugged, very difficult terrain. And, you know, people need to stay together. And so I've done a pretty good job over the years of emphasizing, you know, that old saying, there's no I in team and that it's a team race. But, you know, I get emails every year. Oh, can I sign up solo? You know, and I'm always just like, no, you're not doing the same race if you were to come solo.
Right.
And it's, you know, and the people who've done it overwhelmingly, you know, embrace and like that aspect of it. And it's fun just to see what happens and see what the dynamic, it's overwhelmingly positive. Every year there's at least one team that's just, you know, problem team. They don't get along or whatever. It's just a weekend, you know,
right.
It's not like you're out there for a week together. Right. I would say we've had far more friendships created from this race than ended. That's only happened occasionally.
Yeah.
I believe, you know, it's just an intrinsic part of the race is that it's a team ultra.
Yeah.
And I really encourage people to do the three person, not the two person. It's even just more, you know, and that's what we want as ultra athletes, right? We want more.
Right.
And the team aspect when you have three versus two is definitely more. It's, you know, more people to think about, care about, work together, work through issues. And so, you know, also since a support team is required, when you have three people instead of two, you're splitting the costs up even more, you know, amongst, you know, the team, which is another reason I wanted the team aspect. It just makes the whole experience of doing a support team required Badwater event, you know, more doable.
Yeah. Well, I think that obviously the dynamic is different. It adds a different challenge, right? Normally we're already trying to deal with stomach and feet and all that. Now it's personality as well, yeah. You know, with the team. We are going to talk about, because you mentioned the crew, right? Normally we have an aid station section. We're going to talk about the crew. However, I'm interested because you just talked about a lot of different things. Somebody's listening. What have you seen that runners tend to underestimate about this race?
The heat and the challenge of the trail. It's late April. And so in most places, it hasn't gotten hot yet or that hot. And so they don't have just sort of natural heat training. So the heat is definitely an issue. And also the intensity, the speed you need to go at. There's a few time cutoffs, and they're not unreasonable by any means, but you need to make them. And we want to get people onto the trail, which is at mile 40, as soon as possible, because in the afternoon and into the evening, and not only the time of day, but as you ascend the trail, the weather changes very dramatically. And so there's a list of mandatory gear they all have to take on the trail, because halfway up the trail or 3/4 of the way up the trail, it might start hailing, for example, after you've been in 110 degree weather all day. And so people really need to heat train and prepare themselves for the heat. And they really need to train on some steep trails. It is, you know, people are shocked every year at how hard it is. They don't expect it to be that hot. They don't expect the trail to be that rugged and that steep and that dry. You know, they need a lot of fluid to get up that. And so those are the main things. And yeah, but picking the teammates is a huge thing, and not everybody does a good job on that. And we do have a bunch of advice on our website about picking teammates. You know, there's some fun things to consider, like, well, like maybe, you know, for example, we'll get Badwater 135 runners who do it with their crew members from Badwater 135. Or it's actually just the crew of the Badwater 135 runner, and they will team up, and then they will do Badwater Salton Sea. But then I also suggest, like, well, if you constantly are finishing around certain other people in races that you're doing, maybe you don't even know them or only in passing, but you're obviously comparable in terms of pace and all of that. So why not team up with them? You know, or if you're very experienced, but there's people that you know that are, you know, getting into the sport and getting, you know, you're trying to mentor them or help them or team up with them. And right. So there's lots of different, you know, ways to think about picking teammates. And then, of course, there's also, you know, male, female, mixed, you know, we have all those different divisions too. And so there's different ways of doing it. And, you know, so there's a lot of ways to think about it. I'm kind of surprised because every year I get emails or see Facebook comments. I don't know anybody who'd want to run this with me. And I'm like, how can that be? Have you never been in an ultra marathon? I mean, like, what do people talk about during ultra marathons, other ultra marathons, right? And, oh, I did this, or I want to do that. I mean, it comes up all the time, right? And you get to know these people, but it's funny. You'll just spill your guts to people on the trail, but then not exchange phone numbers with them or something, you know, or, you know, maybe you follow them on Instagram, but you don't actually know. I mean, it's just, those are people that you could be running this with.
We haven't talked about this, but we should sponsor a group of people to run it.
That'd be fun.
Oh my God.
The worst possible mix.
What's that?
Worst possible mix.
Yeah. That's we should rig it and then document the whole thing.
Okay.
I mean, who knows? I mean, I've just seen everything out there.
Yeah, and I'm sure.
People that are 50 years apart in age on the same team. You know, we've had just people don't know each other. But some of those people, they're friends for life now. So, you know, so but good. The course is awesome. And so while the team aspect is a huge aspect of it, the route is awesome too. It's really, people are amazed. Like this is a part of California that even people from LA and San Diego don't go to.
Right. Well, yeah. I'm sorry. I think you bring up a great point. I think the biggest thing that a lot of people are going to underestimate is going to be the temperature extremes. It is, like you said, an April race. It is going to be hot in the beginning. And most people haven't trained for heat starting in an April season because they've gone through their whole winter training, at least here in the States. And so I think that definitely will catch people off. And then the other flip side of the swing of temperatures is so vast in this race that it goes from hot, hot, hot to freezing as well.
Yeah.
Literally, it could be, you know, over, it's probably going to be around 100 during the first day. On a cool year, it's 95. Other years, it's 105. But then you head up that trail and the sun goes down and now it's 30 out and it might rain or hail. And then the ascent to the top of Palomar at the end, it's usually damp, could be raining, could be so foggy, it's basically raining. And it was funny, the first year that I hosted it, 2013, I didn't emphasize what the, you know, I was getting people more focused on the heat and they didn't bring clothes for the final ascent. And so if you look at the photos from the first year, there's runners crossing the line wearing their jeans and wearing like cotton sweatshirts and socks on their hands and stuff like that, because they were just packing for the desert part. They weren't thinking about coming up that mountain. And which is funny, because like at the Badwater 135, it's a different final ascent. It's never damp. So even though the temperature drops a lot, it's not damp out. And so people will finish that. It might be 40 degrees at Mount Whitney Portal, and they'll come running in at a t-shirt and, or a tank and shorts. You know, they'll have to cover up pretty quickly usually, but they're not cold on the trail. Badwater Salton Sea, it's much more extreme because you just go, it's such so much more compact in how soon the weather changes dramatically on people.
And that was specifically when we had Emily Lyons on, that was one of the things she talked about. She talked about it almost like it was three separate courses, but then specifically that I think her partner was not prepared for that final climb. And, you know, I mean, I think he had the required gear, but he was cold, you know. It was one of those like, hey, he made it, but next time he'll probably do some things different. So it's interesting to hear that.
That's the thing about the sport vehicle. You don't have to carry all this stuff on your, I mean, the trail part, we have the mandatory gear, but that's just 8 miles in the middle of the race. You got a support vehicle, so you might as well just throw the extra jacket and base layers and gloves and beanies and tights and, you know, rain pants and whatever you got, and just put it in a bag and have it in the car. It's better to be looking at it than looking for it.
Well, so let's talk about that. That's a big piece. Like I said, normally we kind of say, hey, what are the aid stations like and all that, but mentioning that this is baby Badwater in terms of Badwater 135. And if anybody's followed that, you know, that there's so many stories when we talk to you about, you have dedicated crews, they kind of leapfrog down the way, right? There are no aid stations, partly because you said for that one, you know, people would die, you know, if they were working those aid stations. But so talk to us about the crew requirements. So if somebody's listening thinking, oh, okay, now I'm interested in this race, what should they know in terms of crew, both requirements and considerations?
Well, they need two people. Some will bring three, some even bring four occasionally because it's just, you know, family members or friends who want to be there. But, you know, two or three is typical. Minivan is best, but you can kind of do without a lot. It's not like mounting a military campaign like that. But, you know, you can be much more modest about it as long as you just bring a range of clothing and a range of things to eat and drink. There are three places on the route where you can buy food and drink, and although only up to mile 50. And so, you know, I really emphasize, you know, basically at that point at mile 6.9 where the crew are waiting for the runners, that's a huge, I wouldn't call it a mini mart. It's like a maxi mart and it has a food court thing in it. And so I, you know, tell everyone load up there, and then going through Borrego Springs around mile 40, 35 to 40, then there's restaurants and markets, gas station, all of that stuff. And so they should get things there. But then they all the runners head onto the trail, and now the crews have a little bit of time. So they can coast back into town, basically get some dinner for themselves, get some extra food to have overnight. And then they drive up the mountain, that pass, and wait for the crew, for the runners to come out. And then they come out at the summit, and then it's like a mile or two down the road, and they go past this little hamlet called Ranchita. And the folks who own the store there, it's kind of a general store, but they also cater to all the Pacific Crest Trail through hikers. So they've got really cool things to eat as well. They're It's called the Montezuma Valley Market, and they have this big statue of a Yeti in front of the store. It's this huge white Yeti statue, and they really support the race, and so they'll stay open, you know, until everyone comes through. And then that we do technically kind of have an aid station there, because anybody with the race can get, you know, I have an arrangement with the store, can go in and get a hot chocolate and a cup of soup, whether they're crew or runners. Because like I said, usually by then the temperatures have dropped like 60 to 70 degrees from during the day, and people are getting their, you know, sunset, you know, for several hours they're coming through. And so, and then there's no services or supplies of any kind for the final 50K of the race. And so that's their last chance to get anything. And so, you know, that store, and then it's a custom that the runners will stop and pose for a photo with the Yeti statue. His name is Ranchetti, the Yeti. And so they'll stop and do a quick photo and then keep on running. And then it's just through the night and then up to the summit of Palomar Mountain, which is, I call it the almost tallest. It's actually the second tallest mountain in San Diego County. The first tallest mountain is too near the start. It would be too short of a race. And also it's on an Indian reservation, and I didn't want to have to get a fifth permit. And there's not a road up to the summit either. And so we go to Palomar Mountain because it gives us a better route, and because there's a paved road to the summit. And because that requires four permits.
I bet that Montezuma Market hot chocolate is like the best hot chocolate.
Yeah, they love it. That soup, they go like crazy. And so that's, it's, and then our finish line, I actually rent like a big house up at this, you know, at the summit every year. And so when people finish, they literally run into the yard of this house, and, you know, we have the whole finish set up there. And then they can come inside and get out of the fog and the freezing temperatures and warm up and have something to, you know, eat and drink and you know, swap stories and gaze it admiringly at their belt.
Oh, rock. Yeah.
Look at that. Too bad those who are listening can't see it, but those who are watching.
I took a photo. So the start line of the race is on the shores of the Salton Sea. And the Salton Sea, as I mentioned, doesn't have any rivers that flow into it. And it tends to just recede. And because of the temperature and the lack of fresh water coming in and various factors, they will sometimes have a big algae bloom, which will then suck the oxygen out of the water and the fish will all die. And so when you're down there on the start line, it's literally just a beach of fish bones and skeletons. And the first year I took a photograph of one of the fish skeletons laying there at the start line. And then I had my artist draw it. And so this is an actual fish, drawing of a photograph of an actual fish skeleton from the start line from the first year. And so that's why we put it on the buckle. That's
sweet.
Where they start and then they finish up in the mountains.
That is so cool. Talk about some race history that you can show off with that buckle.
Yeah.
All right. So we've kind of talked about aspects of the race, and there's got to be people now that are listening. They're just like, I want to do it. How do I get in? So we know it's capped at 100 runners. The website, and we'll talk about it on the way up, but the website has all kinds of information, all the rules, all the different things. But what is the registration process look like? And are there any requirements for running this race?
Basically, we need to see that somebody's done a tough 50, preferably 100 miler in the past year. So it's not much. It's nothing like applying for Badwater 135, which is, you know, four 100s and, you know, 3 years of 100 running 100s. And then a lot of people don't get in. This race, you know, almost everyone gets in as long as they meet the qualifying standards and they get in before we might fill. And but we definitely want to see that they have some business being there. Mm. You know, we don't want somebody who's done marathons or 50Ks or just, you know, wants a Badwater experience and they're not, you know, they shouldn't be out there because it's an extreme environment. Literally everyone who does this says this is tougher. This is as tough or tougher than any of the hundreds that I've done. And this is 81 miles. because that's the distance. I'm not one of those people who's like, let's just randomly find 100 miles on the map and that's what they're going to do because 100's this special number. There's no way to make this a 100 mile race that makes any logical sense. It's from the shores of the Salton Sea to the top of Palomar Mountain, just like Badwater 135 is 135 miles because that's the route, the distance from Badwater Basin to the end of the road on Mount Whitney. And everybody says this is as tough as any 100 I've ever done, and if not tougher, because the conditions are so extreme and then the team aspect and just everything associated with it. And so 81 so that's why we'll let people in with a 50, but we'd rather see a 100, and it's got to be a tough 50. You know, if somebody just does like a 50 around a cool track in the winter, now we're just going to, you can just sign up, but then we look at your ultra sign up. And then you have until at least 60 days before the race to submit. If you haven't done something, then up until 60 days prior, you can do something worthwhile and then let us know. We'll look at the ultra sign up and then we'll approve it. If somebody doesn't meet the standard, then we're just going to kick them out. So it is effectively first come, first serve, first serve. And we do occasionally kick people out because they just aren't qualified to be there.
So my DNF at Umstead where they gave me credit for 50 isn't going to get me in the door.
At least you did a 50, but
the answer's no.
To their first 50 at Badwater Cape Fear,
right?
51.4 miles, and although it's flat, it's very difficult, and it's a Badwater event, and so we've had a few people submit that as their qualifier. But most of the people have done multiple hundreds. I mean, you get everything. You know, we'll have Ray Sanchez out there who's, you know, done everything 10 times. You know, and then you'll have people who've just done one or two 50s, but maybe they've, you know, crewed many times or otherwise, you know, been engaged with the sport. Just like Badwater, just like all my races, I want people to finish. So it's, you know, we're just trying to help people finish by having some standards to get in.
Right. Makes sense. I think it's great.
Given the trail section and how rugged that is and the fact that, you know, it's away from the road and they're on their own. And we just don't want, you know, random people heading up that trail. Not when we have four permits that we have to get and four government agencies who need to think we're doing a good job and all of that.
The legend. Yep. Legend of Badwater. It's a good one, man.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun over the years. You know, when I started it, it was my thinking was, you know, Badwater 135 just happens once a year and it's like this big family reunion and then, you know, new family members coming in, but it just happens once a year and we can only take 100 people. And so that was what inspired me to start this race was let's provide an authentic Badwater experience at a different time of the year so that more people can, you know, be involved with the wide world of Badwater and be part of the Badwater family. And so we've had people who've, you know, and then there's people just fall in love with that race. It's not necessarily a stepping stone to Badwater 135 or anything like that. It's just an awesome race in its own right.
Well, so I'm interested. Obviously, it's got the Badwater name, and we associate that with just quality, kind of your stamp, right? The name you made for it. But you're on the receiving end of these runners, and they show up. What does it mean to you to have people come, you know, I'm sure really all your races, but come run Salton Sea?
Yeah, I love it because, you know, it's not as famous as the Badwater 135. Like people all over the world have heard of that race. And, you know, when people make the effort to get out to this remote part of California, and they'll come from all over the world. I mean, we've had teams from all over. We've had 41 states represented and 31 countries.
Wow.
And so it just kind of honestly blows my mind sometimes when, you know, there'll be a team from Brazil or Denmark or Japan or something like that. I'm like, wow, like that is committed. That is serious. You know, it's like, that's what you're spending your vacation money and time on is to come all the way out for this race. And that's why I, you know, work hard to give them an awesome experience. And if it's got to have the Badwater name on it, it's got to be an awesome route. It's got to be a place most people wouldn't go. It has to be an epic challenge. It has to be very well organized. It's got to have, you know, the feeling of the Badwater family. And this race has all of that. And yeah, it's a blast and I love it.
Well, it is no doubt a bucket list race. My interest is definitely peaked. And so, you know, like I said at the beginning, you've been a fan favorite. We just are, you know, honored that you're coming back talking to us. This has been so fun. And for everybody listening, obviously there's some huge takeaways from this, right? Do the research. We'll list the Badwater website, but go read the rules, go read the must knows, go read all that information, because you've taken the time to provide that information, Chris, and a lot of the stuff we talked about.
There's videos on YouTube that we've produced or that runners have. You know, there's a lot of race reports online. You know, I'm the race director. It's, you know, my job to promote this race, but I wouldn't put it on if it wasn't awesome. But, you know, you want to see what the other, what the actual participants have to say and what they have to offer.
And 100%.
We have links to some of those stories from our website as well, because there's a lot of good information out there that people have really, I mean, we've had runners, you know, multiple runners do it 6 times now, even.
Wow.
Which is awesome. There's great information about there about how to do it. And then every year we have a new event page on Facebook. And so sometimes teams meet up that way. But if you just click team, there's a section in the website about team aspect and with all the ideas about how to select teammates and ways to think about selecting teammates. And sooner the people do it, the better, you know, another good reason to have a 3-person team is if something happens to one of you late in the game, at least you can switch over to a 2-person. You know, it's better to be, you know, get a third teammate or even have a backup, but you know, people get injured, people, you know, get busy, people have things come up in life and then they can't necessarily make it. And so having a, you know, a third teammate or a backup teammate is a good idea also.
And for clarity, you're talking about prior to the race.
No, once the race starts, that's what it is. Like if you start as a 2-person or a 3-person, that's what you are. And, you know, we've had people have to switch from 3 to 2-person race week. We've had teams swap out at, you know, runner race week. You know, all of those things have happened just because, you know, life gets in the way sometimes. And that's great. And as long as they start together and ideally finish together. But I think last year the DNF rate was like 40% or something. I mean, this is a hard race. Yeah. It has a lower finishing rate than Badwater 135. So
that's crazy.
135, but we have the selection process. And so that's picking what we think are the best 100 people to do it. But still, it's a tough race. And picking a good teammate, training for the heat, training for the mountains, all of that's really important. And so my best advice is get your teammates now and then go enter some other races and run them together.
Yeah.
You know, because you're probably going to some of the same races anyway.
Yeah.
So why not just enter them with the plan of staying together the whole time and see how that works? You know,
makes a lot of sense.
One talks all the time and one is silent, or one wants to listen to music and the other wants to talk. Like these are things better figured out in advance.
And if you end up in a fist fight, then you know it probably wasn't meant to be.
It only happened once and it was the first year. wasn't until the finish line.
And were they fighting over which who got the socks to put on their hands because they didn't know it was gonna be cold?
We've had, you know, one thing.
Well, look, man, it's been an absolute pleasure. And so for everybody that's plugging in, you know, hopefully this gives you some inspiration. I do recommend again the Emily Lyons episode. And if this is your first time plugging in, or if you found us on YouTube, we do have the main show where we typically do interview style. That's where Emily's and Chris's previous episode was. So we just thank you for taking the time. If you're finding the value, please share, like, follow, all that good stuff. But we appreciate you more than you know. And Chris, just thanks so much for the time, man.
Oh, you're always... I love your show. It's fantastic. It's just great that you're doing it. It's a real resource to the community. It's fun. It's educational. And it would be great to have both of you. You know, Jeff has run Badwater Cape Fear twice and volunteered at it a few times. So, you know,
I'm close to being in.
I'm feeling the pressure.
I'm the Cape Fear. Jeff volunteered again. So Jeremy, you run, Jeff volunteer, and then you both come run Salton Sea together.
There you go. I actually probably will volunteer this next time. I don't think I'll run this next year. It just depends on what I got going on. So I will be there one way or the other. You can guarantee that.
I see you got your shirt on too. I see just the top of it. Yeah, very cool. Don't you feel left out?
I do. Honestly, I do. I do.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to sidetrack on a whole nother race, but yeah.
But, thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much. We'll be talking soon, Chris. And
cut. All right, listen, thank you so much. We recognize the fact that you are probably just hanging on just for a couple more minutes as you're finishing up your run. But really, we do want to give you a huge thank you for the constant support that you've shown us. We hear you and we feel you. And the best way for us to continue to grow is for you to share us with your friends. Tell them what you put in your ears when you're out there on a long run. Hit the like button, leave us a comment, leave a review, and give us some direct feedback on what you like about the show and also what you don't like. We're here to improve and do it for you.
And it really means the world. And listen, if you would like to support financially, you can connect with us on Patreon at patreon.com/theultrarunningguys, or you can use the support link in the show notes. Any and all support goes directly back into growing the show and helping us get better at what we love to do, which is to serve all of you. And with that, finish up that run, get cleaned up, and just show up.
Clean.
Clean.